Welcome to the deep dive. So there is this pretty big news recently. A New Jersey CPA, Ofgar Gabbay, he just pleaded guilty in this huge tax fraud conspiracy.
Yeah, that's right.
And it feels like a really significant case. So today we're going to, you know, take a deep dive into the source material you've provided, try and unpack how this one guy's actions sort of fed into this, well, multi-billion dollar scheme.
Exactly. And I think our mission here, it's not just about what happened, but really trying to understand the vulnerabilities, both in the financial systems and, frankly, in human behavior, that let this kind of massive fraud happen, let it grow.
Right.
We want to pull out the key insights, the lessons about how actions that might seem small can, well, snowball into these really big systemic threats.
Okay, yeah, exactly. So to kick off this deep dive into how it all worked, let's maybe zoom in on Ofer Gabbay himself.
Good place to start.
The sources we looked at show he was, you know, a trusted CPA, had over 30 years of experience.
Fine time.
But the court documents, they paint a different picture. They show him actively promoting these fraudulent tax shelters, actually manufacturing evidence, like telling clients to backdate checks and documents. And then he filed the false tax returns. It really seems like a weaponization of professional credibility, as the sources put it.
And, you know, what's really interesting here is that Gabbay, he wasn't acting alone, not some lone wolf.
Right.
He was actually a key facilitator, sort of the middleman in this much bigger plot orchestrated by, let's call them the masterminds.
Okay.
We're talking about Jack Fisher, another CPA who's described as a pioneer of these kinds of abusive schemes.
The pioneer, wow.
Yeah. And James Sinnott, an attorney who apparently enabled the massive expansion of the whole thing.
Okay.
And then there's their main assistant, Yekaterina Lopukhina. She also went by Kate Joy. She's actually an international fugitive now.
Really?
She was the one providing these, like, predetermined inflated valuation targets to the appraisers, just telling them the number they needed.
Predetermined targets.
Yeah. And the scale here is just staggering. Over $1.3 billion in fake deductions.
Billion, with a B.
With a B,
yeah.
Which led to a tax loss for the government about $450 million. Yeah. And Fisher and Sinnott, they personally pocketed millions, funded this incredibly lavish lifestyle we're talking, a private jet, homes down in Bonaire.
A private jet? Good grief. That sheer amount of money, it makes you wonder how exactly did they build this dollar machine to actually pull it off?
Yeah.
Can you maybe break down the mechanics? Like, what's the difference between a real conservation easement and the scam version they were running?
Absolutely. So a legitimate conservation easement, it's actually a noble thing, right? Its purpose is to protect land permanently. It's driven by conservation.
Okay.
And yes, you can get a tax deduction, but it's based on the fair market value of the land's development rights you're giving up, and it has to be determined by a qualified, independent appraiser. Keywords there.
Independent.
The fraudulent scheme, it basically flipped this whole idea on its head. The promoters, they'd go out and acquire really low value land. Think like an abandoned golf course or just some remote scrubland nobody wanted.
Worthless land.
Pretty much. Then they'd get a complicit appraiser, someone in on the deal, to create this grossly inflated appraisal.
How inflated are we talking?
Oh, wildly inflated.
Yeah.
They'd invent these totally unrealistic highest and best use scenarios, like claiming that piece of scrubland was perfect for a, I don't know, luxury resort or something.
Oh, right.
And they'd end up valuing the land at maybe 10 times, sometimes way more than what they actually paid for it. There was one example. I think they bought land for around $12 million.
Yeah.
It got appraised at $223 million.
Oh, $223 million. That's insane.
So that bogus appraisal was the key then, turning dirt into paper gold.
Exactly. That was a linchpin.
So how did they use that fake value to syndicate it, bring in these wealthy investors? And what was the deal with the backdating you mentioned? Right. So that crazy appraisal allowed them to syndicate the deal. They'd package it up and sell units like shares to high-income taxpayers.
Okay.
And the hook was the promise of this massive guaranteed tax deduction, usually something like 4-to-1, maybe even 4.5 to 1 on their investment.
Guaranteed.
There's another red flag.
A huge one. And a really crucial step, as you mentioned, was the backdating. They needed to make it look like investors got in before the end of the tax year, even if they joined at the last minute, sometimes literally on New Year's Eve.
So they just faked the dates on the documents?
Faked the dates. So the partnership then claims this enormous, completely fake charitable deduction based on the bogus appraisal and passes those deductions down to the investors.
Allowing them to illegally slash their own tax bills.
Precisely.
Man, that is sophisticated and brazen. I assume the government didn't just sit back. What did the IRS and Congress do? No, they definitely reacted. The IRS, they designated these schemes as listed transactions with something called Notice 2017-10. That basically put everyone on notice and meant severe penalties if you didn't report your involvement.
Okay, so shining a spotlight on it.
Exactly. And then came a legislative fix. In December 2022, Congress passed the Secure 2.0 Act. And a key part of that capped the charitable deduction for these syndicated partnership deals.
Capped it how?
Capped it at no more than 2.5 times the partner's original investment.
So taking away that huge 4-to-1 incentive.
Exactly. It effectively killed the profitability for any future deals like this. Pulled the rug right out from under the model.
And then came the criminal side. We heard about Gabby pleading guilty, but Fisher and Sinnott.
Oh, yeah. The stakes got much higher. Jack Fisher got sentenced to, wait for it, 25 years in prison.
25 years.
And James Sinnott got 23 years. These are, I mean, among the longest sentences ever handed down for tax crimes.
That's incredible.
The judge apparently called their actions a level of greed that is sinister. Really strong words.
Sinister. Yeah, that fits. So this all brings us to the lessons, right? What should people take away from this?
Absolutely. I think there are crucial lessons here for you, the listener. Mm. First and foremost, that old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Mm. Any promise of getting tax deductions that are multiples of your investment, that is a massive flashing red flag.
Okay.
Also, be really wary of high-pressure sales tactics. Or if the appraisal is provided by the promoter and seems just wildly out of touch with reality.
Right. Do your own homework.
Exactly. And for professionals listening, CPAs, advisors, due diligence is just non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. You cannot just accept information, especially appraisals and deals like this, at face value. You have to dig in, ask questions, document your inquiries.
Because failing to do that.
Failing to do that can lead to severe penalties, losing your license, even prison time, as we've clearly seen with Gabby and the others. The consequences are real.
So wrapping this up, what does this whole story mean for you listening? I mean, this massive fraud involving architects like Fisher and Sinnott down to the CPAs like Gabe, who made it happen, it really just hammers home how vital skepticism and vigilance are in anything financial.
It really does. And ultimately, this isn't just about, you know, dollars and cents lost to tax fraud. It's a stark reminder that the real cost of this kind of unchecked greed isn't just financial. It's the erosion of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in professionals, mm-hmm. trust in the system itself, which kind of leaves us with a big question to think about. When the people we trust, the professionals, betray their roles for profit, how do we make sure the systems designed to protect us actually stay strong? And maybe more importantly, what role do each of us play individually in upholding that integrity?